Hello and welcome back to the Greater Greener Georgia podcast, our Meet the Candidate series. Today, our host Mia Delamar speaks with Ashwin Ramaswamy, candidate for Georgia State Senate District 48. Find out his background and his stance on some of the most important issues facing our state. As always, enjoy and don't forget to hit that like button and subscribe for more episodes like this.
Hi. My name is Ashwin Ramaswamy, and I'm running for State Senate District 48, which includes parts of Johns Creek, Suwannee, Sugar Hill, Cumming, Alpharetta, and Buford. It's good to meet you all.
Well, thank you, Ashwin, for coming to join us today. Thank you for joining me on the chair. So we always start this off with something a little fun, something to kind of break the ice. So what is your favorite food?
My favorite food is actually, it's a South Indian dish called pongal.
Pongal?
Yes. It's really good. It's basically rice and lentils, and you mix it together. It's very healthy food, and it's, you know, I would make it all the time. You know, it's very good.
So you graduated from Stanford, you went to Georgetown Law. How were those experiences going to set for from schools?
It was great. But I'd say the experience really started here in Johns Creek. I was born and brought up here. So before going to Stanford, Georgetown, I went to Chattahoochee High School. And these kinds of folks I met, the teachers I had, those experiences really set me up for success later. I did my undergrad in computer science at Stanford, was involved in a lot of the tech scene. But I soon just realized that there's so much you can do in the government. We need a lot more folks with tech backgrounds in public service. So I worked for a few years in the federal government on cybersecurity, election security, ultimately decided I wanted to go down that path more of law and policy. So that's why I was in D.C. for some time at Georgetown. But finally, I realized there's no place like home, and it's really good to help your own community and give back to the folks who made you into who you are today.
Absolutely. In terms of giving back, what would you say are your top three legislative priorities if elected?
My top three priorities are, first of all, education, fully funding our education system, supporting students in all our public schools, making sure they have the opportunity to succeed. The second is healthcare, ensuring that we're expanding Medicaid, ensuring that low-income Georgians have access to the healthcare they need. And finally, around like sustainability for a future. And this includes things like making sure housing is more affordable, ensuring that we're combating the climate crisis, and also working towards just thinking about the long-term future as opposed to just the next 2 or 3 years.
Speaking of long-term future, what's your stance on economic development and job creation in the state of Georgia?
Everyone loves job creation, and it's something which, on a bipartisan basis, people can agree is a good thing. But I believe that there's a lot of untapped opportunity here and things we can really do to supercharge that. The first thing we have to do is make sure we have the more opportunity for talent here. So that includes, as I mentioned, funding our schools, but also giving funding to community colleges, technical universities, technical schools to ensure that everyone has the access to the kinds of jobs which are high-paying and can be engines of economic growth. And then the next thing I'll say is that with my own technology background, having worked in startups and tech, I believe that we can bring a lot of investment here as long as we're able to build the infrastructure for it. So we have the talent, we need to further build on that, but we also have to make sure that we have a working and well-functioning public transit system. We need to have laws that protect workers and protect reproductive rights and access to healthcare. I think when we have all these things together, we're going to have more investment and we will continue to be an economic engine for the Southeast and for Georgia.
Absolutely. So what are your plans for addressing environmental concerns and promoting sustainability in our state?
We have to govern not in a short-term way in terms of the next 2 or 3 years, but we need to think long-term. And long-term, we have to live our lives sustainably, whether that's through the economy, whether it's just individuals, reduce, reuse, and recycle. And I believe that there's a lot of things we can do at the policy end to actually do this. The first thing we can do is promoting the use of EV electric vehicles. There's already something where companies have been investing in Georgia in terms of building plants and things like that. We should continue to lead the green energy revolution, especially with a lot of new federal investment through some of of President Biden's infrastructure plans and the Inflation Reduction Act, Georgia should take advantage of these new sources of energy because that's really what the future looks like. We should also make sure that we are promoting more sources of clean energy, whether that's by electric school buses, whether it's through investing in public transit, because all of these things will actually help to reduce traffic on the streets and congestion, all the pollution that comes from there. And finally, we should also make sure that we have the right structures in Georgia to responsibly deal with energy and energy production. Georgia's Public Service Commission has not had elections in a very, very long time, which is makes it, you know, somewhat dysfunctional, right? And that it's not really representing the will of the people. And one of my priorities there will be to make sure that we are passing legislation to ensure that the PSC can act efficiently, is able to promote clean energy, and is able to reflect the will of the people.
Absolutely. It's scary that you mentioned the Public Service Commission because those elections, some of those will be happening in 2025. So
just hopefully.
Hopefully. They should be happening, some of them. Some of the seats will be up in 2025.
Yeah.
For sure. We know that. So we certainly want you guys to be out there, take action, sign our action alert for the PSC. Because, they haven't had races in a long time. There have been some seats that are a couple years overturned.
Right. And the thing is, like, you know, there's so much big money in politics, right? So you always have these companies that have vested interests, which are not the same as the interests of the people in terms of having a clean environment and sustainable future. So that's why we have to have people, you know, work together to elect the right kinds of folks to office.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how do you plan to support Georgia's agriculture industry while also addressing environmental concerns?
So one thing we can really consider is thinking about what are the biggest needs for the agricultural industry and how we can address them. I know that there's been a lot of new advancements in agricultural technology, whether it's usage of drones, whether it's usage of things like AI, and I want to make sure that we are responsibly deploying them in a way that's empowering folks in the industry, but it's also in a way that's allowing things to be more efficient, but also good for the environment. And I think the other thing we can really think about is investing in these rural communities in Georgia, because I think there's a big divide, right, between the urban, suburban parts of Georgia and the rest of Georgia in terms of, you know, like access to education or even access to Wi-Fi, you know, or broadband and things like that. And I think the more that we're able to invest fully in our state and give everyone these kinds of opportunities, the better we'll be in terms of investing back in these communities. And that will allow folks who are from the, you know, agricultural industry or from those kinds of communities to play a bigger role in terms of how they can further be supported in their way.
What are the specific environmental issues that are happening in your district in 48?
I'm fortunate that 48 is mostly suburban, so it's a fairly nice place to live in, and that there are a lot of good trees, a lot of parks, and a lot of green space. But as everywhere, we have environmental justice issues. And one such issue is just the difficulty in getting around without a car. The suburbs are very car-centric. Right. So, like, you know, we should have more opportunities for things like public transit, whether it's like a bus system to more easily connect folks here, whether it's something like multimodal transportation, more trails. I want to really invest in those kinds of things. I'll tell you a story. When I was in high school, I actually spent a whole year taking classes at Georgia Tech. So every day I would go to Tech, but I wasn't able to drive all the way there. I was just in high school. So I would go to the Manso Park and Ride MARTA bus stop, take the MARTA bus all the way to North Springs, and then take the North Springs train all the way down to Midtown. And I'd do this every day. I'd spend like 3 hours a day in public transit. Yeah. And, you know, you start to realize that, like, not everyone has the luxury of being able to own a car or drive a car in that way. You know, people with disabilities, people who are younger, or people who are older as well. It's an environmental justice issue when they just can't get around if they can't drive a car, right? So that's one a big issue that we have here in the suburbs.
Absolutely. And I can tend to agree on that. And how do you plan to address income inequality and support low-income families in Georgia?
Income inequality is a huge problem. It's something which has been further exacerbated over the past couple of years as the rich have gotten richer, especially during the pandemic. And it's something we need to address because ultimately we don't want to leave anyone behind, right? You know, people can make businesses, they have different skills and jobs based on the market, but everyone should have a livable wage. And as long as, you know, if people are working, they should be able to start a family and do what they need in order to be successful. One big way we can address income inequality in Georgia is actually through something that may not seem directly connected, but is quite connected, and that's Medicaid expansion. Because healthcare costs are a very large part of household living costs, particularly for low-income families. So by expanding access to Medicaid, which would take federal dollars that we're already paying in taxpayer money, and it would bring it back to Georgia, would give hundreds and thousands of Georgians access to preventative care. And this would save money for everyone, the entire health system. And it would make these families, it would be life-changing for them because they would be able to spend that money they might have otherwise had to spend on, you know, emergency visits or something else like that to actually invest back in their family. So that's one area I want to focus on. And the second thing we can do is also having more equitable investment in education. Right now, the way that our education investment system works, a lot of it is based really on the wealth of your community, right? So if your community is paying more property taxes, you get more money in your schools. And you know, that's how it is, but that doesn't mean that we can't make sure that low-income communities also have the funding and resources they need, whether that's by providing incentives for teachers to go and teach in those kinds of schools, whether it's by providing additional funding. There's a program by the federal government called Title I, which provides funding for low-income schools. But that's something which the national GOP is talking about cutting and completely removing as part of Project 2025. So that's something which, on our end in Georgia, we can protect by increasing funding for those kinds of schools to supplement Title I funding. We should ensure that every student has access to free meals and schools. That's a very simple way to just create more equity, right, and address some of that inequality. But I hope that by making these long-term investments in our next generation, that's how we break the cycle, and that's how we allow everyone to be successful here.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that like a couple of counties, as I've seen just scrolling on Facebook, have started to offer free lunch for everybody, not even just, you know, low income, but just they can go and get free lunch at school, like free lunch and free breakfast.
Right.
Kind of more in the like Southeast Metro, but I've started to see that as well. So I think that would be awesome to see that more just in Georgia overall.
I would also add, you know, people often ask, how will we pay for it? Well, I'll say Georgia has $11 billion budget surplus, so we can afford to make some investments in our future as part of what we should be doing. But there's also a lot that we can do working with our state representatives, our congressional representatives and senators to ensure that we get more funding from Congress, you know, all the mechanisms that come from the federal government. It's just a matter of being open to it and realizing that we need these investments in our communities.
Absolutely. Speaking of school lunch, were you a lunchbox kid or did you actually eat lunch at school?
I'm a lunchbox kid.
Oh,
and yeah. It's largely because I'm vegetarian, so there weren't many vegetarian options. So that's another issue, right? So, I mean, if you really want to have a school environment that's inclusive, especially if you have a very large immigrant population, you want to make sure you're providing, whether it's, you know, access to vegetarian food, access to kosher food, halal food, you know, whatever dietary restrictions folks have. I know that you can't do everything at once, but if there is a significant population, the school should really consider serving the people that they're supposed to serve.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm currently vegetarian.
Oh, nice.
I don't do it often.
Yeah.
But how would you address racial and social justice issues in our state?
I think so. A lot of racial and social justice issues, I believe, can be addressed by first starting at the economic inequality issues. Because ultimately, you know, there's the legacy of things like slavery, Jim Crow, you know, all systemic racism we had in our institutions. But a lot of that has manifested in a racial wealth gap, for example. So I believe that a lot of these policies, when they're targeting folks who are lower income, ensuring they have the access to what they need, can really alleviate some of those things. That being said, I think what we can also do is increase awareness of things. So I was just telling you before this podcast of the history of Forsyth County. So South Forsyth is in my district. There's a whole history of Forsyth where there used to be in the early 1900s, there was a large, fairly large black community in Forsyth. But in 1911, 1912, around that time, the black community was violently forced out. And for a long time, there was a racial homogeneity in the Forsyth area. And only recently have folks started to come to terms with that and realizing, you know, that need to make amends for that, right? You need to teach about that in the schools so people realize that this can never happen again. And as Forsyth is now becoming more diverse, whether it's Asian Americans coming in, whether it's other folks who typically would not be here coming in, the community is growing together. So I think a lot of what's needed is that kind of education, whether it's something like Forsyth, as I mentioned, or whether it's even as simple as making sure AP African American studies is available in the classroom, right? As you've seen the whole recent controversy around that. I think the education part is what's really key there. And I think once people are educated and they start to realize the legacies of racism of our country, people will be more open to these kinds of bigger changes that can actually alleviate these inequalities.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you plan to support our small businesses and entrepreneurs? Because Georgia is a huge state of small businesses, entrepreneurs, especially City of Atlanta, Metro Atlanta. A bunch of businesses and small businesses exist in all of our ecosystems. So how do you plan to support that class of workers? Yep. Owners. Yeah.
I love small business and entrepreneurs. I'm an entrepreneur myself. I used to work in various different startups, working on technology, software, various kinds of things, whether it's video streaming, whether it's a registration form for people to use or things like that. And I have my own consulting firm where I work with many startups to help them build what they need so they can get off the ground. And I think a lot of this goes back to the fundamentals I mentioned before, whether it's making sure we have enough education so we have a clear talent pipeline. One example is we have a nation has a shortage in cybersecurity jobs, yet every small business has to worry about ransomware attacks. And ensuring that we have that pipeline, whether it's state resources giving protection or whether it's encouraging these businesses to hire someone to support that kind of security, that's something that can really help, because I'm sure we've all heard about the CrowdStrike incident that happened last week, or Delta had to cancel a lot of its flights and all this disruption happened. There's a lot that I think government can do in terms of just providing those kinds of guardrails to ensure these issues don't happen again. And then the last thing I'll also say is, I'm all for cutting red tape, for small businesses. I'm sure anyone who has had to deal with the government has to fill out tons and tons of forms. It's not great, right? And there's so many ways in which we can still have the same requirements, because a lot of these requirements are important. You want to make sure people are vetted. You want to make sure you're following the law and you're eligible for a program. But there are ways to just make the user experience better, whether it's by digitizing forms, whether it's by improving the user experience, or to just make it easier to work with the government. And that's something I'm dedicated to doing. I want to make sure that working with the government, whether it's hiring an employee, giving them healthcare, should be easy as 1, 2, 3. It should not require hundreds and hundreds of forms and all the stuff that currently is set up.
Yeah, absolutely. Accessibility is certainly an issue, especially for small business owners. What measures will you take to increase transparency and accountability in the government?
There's so much to do in transparency and accountability. The first thing I would mention is, when I was in the federal government, I worked on election security and cybersecurity, and we worked on ensuring every person's vote is counted, whether it was Georgia or other states across the country. My opponent is one of the fake electors who was indicted with Donald Trump for trying to overturn the 2020 elections, trying to switch votes from Biden to Trump in 2020. So I think the first step to accountability is making sure those kinds of folks are no longer in office. And that's honestly what pushed me to run now in this particular seat, was seeing that contrast, right? Where not only is my opponent not focusing on the issues that matter, but he's actively trying to undermine the votes of Democrats, independents, and Republicans. So I think that kind of accountability is so important. We also need to increase transparency, whether it's by improving our campaign finance system. There's a recent news article about how the state had to spend $2 million on creating its campaign finance portal, but it doesn't work properly. And I ended up actually building my own version of it because I have a tech background. And if I can do it, I'm sure the government can find a contractor to do it better, right? And we have to get rid of the leadership committees that we have here in Georgia, where they basically allow candidates to raise unlimited amounts of money by completely bypassing the campaign finance restrictions. And that's not right, right? We need to make sure we reduce the influence of money in politics. And finally, we need to get rid of gerrymandering. We need to make sure we have independent redistricting commissions to ensure that people choose their representatives, not the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you plan to engage with and be accessible to your constituents?
I plan to be very accessible to my constituents. I'm gladly giving people my phone number. You know, I give them my card and like just call me, and then they're like, I can just call you. And it's like, yeah, that's the point of being a representative. But more concretely, my goal would be, you know, in November after I win the election, I'm going to spend a lot of my time between that time and January when the session starts, just going around in the community, meeting people where they are, both meeting with advocacy groups and groups like DCV, but also meeting with just people in house of worship, whether it's a church, mosque, synagogue, temple, you know, those kinds of places, and just making sure I'm there. So if people want to talk with me, they know that they can reach out to me. Every single person should have some idea who their state senator is, and my goal is to make sure that happens. Because I think it's a bit sad that right now most people don't know much about local government. It's not their fault. It's the representative's fault, because they're not necessarily reaching out and doing that kind of outreach, because that requires a lot of, you know, energy and work to make that happen. But yeah, I intend to do that, like basically do a tour of my district, talk with people who voted for me, talk with people who didn't vote for me, and just make sure that they know that I'm going to represent them finally.
Absolutely. And how do you feel about the state of not only Georgia, but the state of the country right now, leading up to November elections, with everything that's happened in the last couple of weeks? How are you feeling?
A lot has changed, but I feel excited. I think what we've seen is that we've always known the stakes of this election, right? It's about, you know, preparing for a future versus regressing back and really, you know, undermining democracy, right? And I think the events of the past couple, you know, weeks, the past few months have, you know, it's been shock after shock after shock, honestly. But I think the shocks have shocked us to the urgency of the moment and how much power we actually have in terms of the fact that we can determine the direction of our country this November. We have a very, very strong contender at the top of the ticket, and Democrats. We have Kamala Harris, who will be president after November. And she's really showing us the path to sort of like a bridge, right? Being able to say that, here's what we've already done. Here's how we protected democracy and delivered for the American people, Georgians. And here's what the future looks like. And, you know, to so many voters whom I meet, they're often surprised to see someone as young as me running. But they're also excited because they realize, like, we need young people like you who are thinking about the issues and are going to be here for a while and just being able to make that difference over the long run. And I think the top of the ticket, you know, having Kamala Harris there is going to definitely help with that. So I'm feeling good about it, but we have to work as hard as we can because we need to make sure everyone feels listened to and everyone is listened to. That's the only way we can actually make progress in this country.
Yeah, well, as a Gen Zer, part of Generation Z,
yeah.
As a person that's part of Generation Z, what would you say to Gen Z right now, as many of us are of voting, all of us are voting age, and are going out to the polls? Some people, this is going to be their first presidential election that they're able to vote in or whichever. How would you speak to them about getting out to the polls?
I would say, as Gen Z, we have power. We should use it responsibly. You know, voting or not voting is a choice, and, you know, both will have consequences. And if honestly, I would say everyone should vote. If you don't vote now, you're going to have to live with the consequences of policies which you had no say in for the next 20, 30, 40 years. Right? This is a crossroads in America's history. What will happen in this election will impact, you know, the next century to come. So it's so important for us to have our voice because it's our world, right? Like, we're going to be living in it for the next long time in the future. So, yeah, please get involved.
Tell people where they can find you on social media, where they can donate,
yeah, whichever, yeah. Definitely. So you can go to my website, ashwinforgeorgia.com, where you can volunteer, you can donate. I have a social media. My handle is ashwinforga. It's on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, yeah, all the other socials. And I would say you can help in many different ways, right? Whether it's by volunteering and canvassing with us, whether it's by donating whatever you can, because you have to raise money to win an election, and I'm not taking any corporate PAC money. I'm really raising just from individuals to get us to where we are. But that's how we make it happen. So please do your part, tell your friends, and we can make sure we flip SD48 and make sure we have the right path forward for our country this November.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you, Ashram, for joining us today. It's been a beautiful time here in the chair.
Thank you, Mia.
Yes.